This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome. I'm Natalie Pincham, and this is the June 13, 2014 podcast, which includes articles on the following topics: pituitary surgery, stereotactic radiosurgery, hydrocephalus, surgical technique, vascular disorders, epilepsy, and interventional neurosurgery. Descriptive epidemiology of pituitary tumors in the United States from 2004 to 2009, a clinical article by Haley Gittleman and colleagues. Pituitary tumors, the third most common brain tumor, are generally benign. This study utilized population-based data from the Central Brain Tumor Registry of the United States, capturing over 97% of all brain tumor diagnoses in the U.S. population. The incidence rate, that is the number of new cases in a specified population during a year, and the annual percentage change in incidence, a way to characterize trends in cancer rates over time, were examined for pituitary tumors diagnosed between 2004 and 2009. Such tumors were diagnosed in more than 50,000 individuals during this time period, and 99.7% of them were benign. The overall age-adjusted incidence rate was 2.87 cases per 100,000 persons, with a significant increase in incidence of 4.25% from 2004 to 2009. There was a significant increase for males and females, whites and blacks, and Hispanics and non-Hispanics. The incidence was highest in those aged 65 to 74 years, and lowest for those aged 15 to 24 years. Females had a greater incidence than males from ages 0 to 50 years, whereas males had a greater incidence than females after age 54 years. Overall, this U.S. population-based analysis showed a significant increase in diagnosis of pituitary tumors between 2004 and 2009. Jugulotympanic paragangliomas treated with gamma knife radiosurgery, a single-center review of 58 cases. A clinical article by Luisa Gandia Gonzalez and co-authors. Jugulotympanic paragangliomas are rare neuroendocrine neoplasms that frequently involve cerebrovascular structures and lower cranial nerves. The treatment of these tumors remains a challenge. Despite the fact that microsurgical removal and fractionated radiotherapy have been the treatment for decades, high rates of morbidity and mortality have been associated with them. Gamma knife radiosurgery is a minimally invasive alternative treatment with scarce morbidity and no associated mortality to date. In this paper, the authors present the largest report to date of a single-center series of jugulotympanic paragangliomas treated with gamma knife radiosurgery. They reviewed 75 patients and analyzed 58 of them. The most common symptom at presentation was tinnitus. Follow-up was as long as the longest follow-up found in the literature. Volumetric tumor control was achieved in 94.8% of patients, and clinical symptom control was reached in 91.4%. These high control rates were comparable to other previously reported series. No factors were significantly correlated with progression-free survival. No morbidity or death from side effects related to treatment or tumor progression were found. This paper supports previous published series, providing a greater number of patients and a longer follow-up. Furthermore, it highlights the efficacy and safety of gamma knife radiosurgery as a therapeutic option for jugulotympanic paragangliomas. Endoscopic approach to choroid cyst. What is the optimal entry point and trajectory? A clinical article by Leonardo Rangel Castilla and colleagues. The optimal entry point and trajectory for endoscopic choroid cyst resection helps to protect important neurovascular structures. But unfortunately, there are large discrepancies in the neuroendoscopic literature. To elucidate this problem, the authors evaluated 39 MRI scans obtained in patients with choroid cysts in whom endoscopic resection was performed. A target point of the choroid cyst was extended out to the scalp through a trajectory in a 3D model to ensure that anatomical structures were not violated. The authors found that the optimal entry point was situated 42.3 mm lateral to the sagittal suture and 46.9 mm anterior to the coronal suture. The mean distance from the entry point to the target on the choroid cyst was 67.9 plus or minus 4.8 millimeters. Interestingly, the location of the ideal entry point changes laterally from the midline as the ventricles change in size. The authors conclude that intraoperative stereotactic navigation should be considered for all endoscopic choroid cyst procedures whenever available. An estimated entry point of 4 cm perpendicular to the midline and 4.5 cm anterior to the coronal suture is acceptable in patients with ventricular megaly. The entry point should be estimated from the patient's own preoperative imaging studies if intraoperative neuronavigation is not available. Stereotactic radiosurgery for Sylvian Fischer arteriovenous malformations with emphasis on hemorrhage risks and seizure outcomes. A clinical article by Greg Bowden and co-authors. This study investigated patient outcomes after gamma knife stereotactic radiosurgery for arteriovenous malformations within or in direct anatomical connection with the Sylvian Fissure. The main outcomes analyzed were hemorrhage risk and seizure activity. This retrospective analysis examined 87 patients at a single institution from 1987 through 2009. Before radiosurgery, 40 patients had experienced hemorrhage and 36 had experienced seizures. The actuarial rates of total obliteration confirmed by MRI or angiography were 35% at 3 years, 60% at 5 years, and 76% at 10 years. Of the 36 patients who had experienced seizures before radiosurgery, postoperative outcomes of Engel class 1 were achieved by 53%. The rates of seizure improvement were 29% at 3 years, 36% at 5 years, and 50% at 10 years. All patients who had been seizure-free before radiosurgery remained seizure-free after radiosurgery. The actuarial rate of arteriovenous malformations hemorrhage after radiosurgery was 5%. This rate equated to an annual hemorrhage rate during the latency interval of 1%. No hemorrhages occurred after confirmed obliteration of arteriovenous malformations. No permanent neurological deficits resulted from the radiation. Gamma knife surgery provided an effective treatment for arteriovenous malformations within the region of the Sylvian fissure. After surgery, a low rate of hemorrhage and improved seizure control were also evident. Carotid cutdown for surgical retrieval of a guide wire introducer, an unusual complication after mitral valve repair. a case report by Joshua Myers and co-workers. The authors describe the surgical retrieval of a guide wire introducer from the common carotid artery after an unusual delayed complication of an endovascular mitral valve repair. A 64-year-old man presented with a transient ischemic attack consisting of left hemiparesis and dysarthria several months after he had undergone complex mitral valve repair. He was found to have an intraluminal foreign object measuring 12 millimeters long with an associated soft thrombus in his right common carotid artery. Endovascular retrieval techniques were not a viable option because of the thrombus and the need for distal protection, as well as the large size of the object relative to the largest available catheters and sheaths. A carotid cut-down approach was used, with the successful retrieval of a guide wire introducer that had probably dislodged while inserting an endovascular balloon into the aorta for cardiac bypass during the mitral valve repair. The patient fared well postoperatively without any complications or neurological deficits. Given the increasing use of endovascular techniques in the cardiac, peripheral vascular, and neurosurgical arena, surgeons should be aware of the rare but potentially devastating complications that can occur and their potential management options. A reduction in errors is associated with prospectively recording them. A clinical article by Adetunji Oremakinde and Mark Bernstein. Recording and monitoring adverse events have recently become important components of error prevention and quality assurance in the health sector, given the huge impact of medical errors on the well-being of patients and the financial losses incurred by health institutions. With this in mind, the authors of the present study assessed the Hawthorne effect of error recording and reporting on the incidence of errors by comparing the error pattern between May 2000 and August 2006 in Study Group A, which was previously published, with a pattern between September 2006 and May 2013 for Study Group B. Significant improvement in most error parameters was observed in the latter period. There were a significantly decreased total number of errors, proportion of cases with errors, mean errors per case, proportion of error-related complications, and clinical impact of errors in Group B compared with those in Group A. The errors in Group B were deemed more preventable than those in Group A. A descending trend in the mean errors per case was demonstrated from 2001 to 2012. This finding shows that the act of recording and reporting errors may alter behaviors, resulting in fewer errors. Thank you for listening. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org. And for more information on how to submit your research to the Journal of Neurosurgery, please visit thejns.org and click on Info for Authors.